3, 2, 1. Welcome back to the Village Celebration. This conversation about missing African-American girls and women is making headlines nationally. The Village Celebration contributor Jonathan Clark is working on an article about the subject and joins us now with the preview. Jonathan, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for the honor of having me join you.
This conversation is very distressing, and recently it swept across the country in terms of an article in the Washington, D.C. area that cited about 64,000 missing African-American girls and women. What have you been able to find out about that number?
So I think the first thing we need to do is we need to look at why suddenly, or at least seemingly suddenly, we're beginning to pay attention to this topic. And it all started out back in about March when when the Washington, D.C. Police Department for the first time began placing its missing persons in social media, which led to this perception that there were 14 missing black women, 14 women who went missing in the space of 24 hours. And that was retweeted by a number of celebrities, and it led to this tremendous outcry and this belief that a number of black women had gone missing without any sort of attention being paid to it. So it turned out that was not entirely accurate. In fact, it wasn't accurate at all.
The 14 women missing in a span of 24 hours.
Right. That did not turn out to be the case. And in fact, the Washington, D.C. police eventually explained that the numbers of missing persons there actually had gone down since 2014. But it led to this conversation that we're now having, which is trying to understand why there are so many, disproportionately so many black persons missing in comparison to the population as a whole.
And so what have you found in terms of hard data? Is this perception, reality? Sort it out for us.
So it's not exactly simply a matter of perception. There are, you know, blacks represent just under 13% of the population of a whole, but they represent almost 40% of missing persons. And so you can see right there that there's the statistical data that points to the larger number of black persons who are missing as a proportion of the whole. But you wouldn't know it necessarily by watching our news coverage or by reports in the media, because the cases that tend to be popularized or the ones that tend to receive widespread coverage tend to not reflect that case. So, for example, if I said Elizabeth Smart or Natalie Holloway or Chandra Levy, or even this recent case of a 15-year-old Elizabeth Thomas who was abducted by her teacher, you almost know those names right away and can cite chapter and verse who these people are, who these young women were, and what happened to them, or at least certainly what the circumstances were surrounding their disappearances. If I said Phoenix Colden or Michaela Randall or Relisha Rudd, names like that, you probably wouldn't know, or at least not right away. You wouldn't be familiar with who those cases are. Well, in the first cases, the first set of names, those were young white women who disappeared at various times. When they disappeared, they received widespread coverage. They became household names. We were familiar with their faces, their families, and their histories. Those other names, those are girls who young women who disappeared, and remain largely unfamiliar to us, remain obscure to us. And so, why does that happen? Why is there that disparity? And there's this sense of desperation among so many that the black women and girls are missing, and no one is doing anything about this. That there's so little interest. And so that's why, even though the D.C. story back in March wasn't exactly what was inaccurate. It fuels this sense that there is a larger issue to be concerned about. Black women and girls are missing, and what are we going to do to start bringing more attention to that? How are we going to start getting at that issue? How are we going to start getting to how are we going to start speaking to why they're missing and what's being done to recover them more actively?
I think you're spot on about what can we do and how do we create an environment that demands law enforcement investigate more aggressively when African American girls and women go missing. But again, we are a community not surprised when we see a disparity in the treatment of a black life relative to a white life.
Yeah, and so that really speaks to that really speaks to where we are right now. You know, we live in a divided society, a divided America. We have political divides, and our lifestyles are divided, and our incomes are divided, and very many instances, radically so. And so now we also have this pronounced racial divide with respect to missing persons. And also to the coverage of missing persons. So I keep coming back to this sense of coverage, and that's something that keeps showing up in my research. It's not just a sense that these cases of young black girls aren't being covered, but there's data to suggest that really is the case.
In 2004, the late Gwen Ifill, PBS journalist,
right, precisely,
first. Mm-hmm. Brought our attention to this in more of a public way. Tell us about her work.
Right. The renowned broadcaster Gwen Ifill back in 2004 was speaking at the Unity Journalists of Color Conference, and she coined this term called the missing white woman syndrome. And basically that's this phrase that suggests that there's a disparity in media coverage between missing white women and missing persons of color, that there's a predominance of coverage involving young white upper middle class women or girls in the United States and Canada and even the United Kingdom, and that much of this coverage, this focus, might be undue on this subsection of women, it's more disproportionate, the degree of coverage that they receive, compared to even missing men or women of color, and of different social classes. There's so much that factors into that as well.
Mm-hmm.
We start looking at these, our certain factors, our understanding of attractiveness and body style and this understanding of what is beauty,
mm-hmm.
as the way that Americans measure beauty. And it will come as no surprise to you that since television drives so much of this coverage, what makes a good story, what appears to make a good story,
mm-hmm.
and the folks who are making these decisions inside our nation's newsroom, what sort of disparity do we have?
And the value that's placed on blonde hair, blue eyes.
Precisely.
And
when you look at our newsrooms and you look at the relative lack of diversity, even now, and this is something I was saying, we've been aware of this for dozens of years now. There still is a relative disparity in our nation's newsrooms. So
in terms of who's deciding what is news.
I'm sorry.
No, to your point, deciding what is news, the people who make those decisions.
Exactly. And at a very subconscious level, it shouldn't come as any surprise to us. And I don't think there are blatantly nefarious reasons why this is occurring. It's natural that someone can understand and relate to people who look more familiar to them, people who look like the folks who sit around the kitchen table, for example, and you know that you know the people who we go and play soccer with, the people in our neighborhoods who are our friends and cousins. It makes sense that we would relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that if there is also a disproportionate number, if diversity isn't necessarily reflected to the extent that it could be mm-hmm. in our nation's newsrooms, that our decision makers are mm-hmm. some of this is being reflected as our decision makers in you know the newsrooms, the editors are selecting cases that they can relate to, cases that touch them in a different way.
And in the
and
meantime,
this is not to say that's an inherently racist, because I know enough of my colleagues to know that this is not the case. But there certainly is a racial component when we see, which of these stories matter to us. There's also this too, you know, how those stories are covered, even when we decide, okay. Well, you know, if we clear that hurdle where we decide, okay, this case of a missing black girl, for example, does matter, is newsworthy, now there become disparities on how we cover that. So, we're you know news coverage of missing black women, you're gonna be likely to see how those sort of stories are gonna focus on you know the victims. All of the baggage that the victim
yes.
and her background that she brings. You know, did she have boyfriends who beat her up?
So
you know,
even
did she come from a troubled past?
So even as you make the case that clearing that first hurdle that yes, this is a story our viewing audience should hear. Then we move on to the victim and the portrayal of the victim in the news media. And you're saying there's a difference between the way the victim is portrayed, even in the midst of her family's suffering.
Right. And this becomes a matter of how the entire apparatus of missing persons work. So it's not just a matter of how the stories are covered from the journalist's point of view, but also how law enforcement understands that. The rate and rapidity at which they pursue something has a lot to do with the perception that they bring to the case. So if you believe that a missing woman has had abusive boyfriends, if she's had you know trouble in her past, the way you report that story and the way you go about investigating that case is different than if you presume that, you know, these are girlfriends and mothers and daughters, as is usually mm-hmm. as is usually the persuasion and as we understand it with white victims. You come at that differently,
mm-hmm.
and if you come at things differently, it's often likely that you're going to have a different outcome.
That is such an excellent point. That is a very distressing point, but it's one that we certainly need to discuss, and I'm sure you're covering that in the article that you're writing for the Village Celebration. Thank you for joining us for the preview of your article that we will have later this week. What else are you working on, Jonathan?
Well, as always, I'm blogging at my personal blog, which is Couldn't Keep It to Myself, which you can find at couldn'tkeepit.wordpress.org. I'm sorry, did I say .org? couldn'tkeepit.wordpress.com.
Okay.
And we'll continue to do contributing pieces to the Village Celebration as well.
We look forward to having you join us again. Thank you so much. And we will read your article in thevillagecelebration.com. Jonathan Clark, contributor to The Village Celebration. We're back in a moment.